It's time now for KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30, bringing you interviews and information regarding nonprofit events and city and county services from Aspen to Rifle. KMTS Connections connects you to everything that matters in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond. Once again, it's Gabe from the KMTS Morning Show, and joining me this afternoon, Nancy Reinisch and Chaz Solomon, who are working on a big fundraiser this Thursday night. It's actually part of an ongoing community project in Africa that you started several years ago. Nancy made it a point to tell me early on that Chaz is the one that will be doing most of the talking today. So we'll see if that indeed holds true. But tell me about this project. Let's go back. I think you said 7 years ago you first began this, and kind of start back there, and we'll bring it to current times.
About 2007, I was volunteering with an organization in Western Kenya. I'd spent about 7 months living there, doing HIV community mobilization. And one of my best friends from high school, another Glenwood Springs High School grad, Zach Brewer, flew over to Kenya, and we had planned out a huge trip to try and backpack all the way to South Africa. We had about 6 weeks to travel together, and we ended up making it about 2 days outside of the community where I'd been living to a bus stop in the middle of nowhere. And at this bus stop, we saw two other Americans who we initially thought were just travelers also passing through. But we struck up a conversation, and they explained to us that they had actually dropped out of college and moved to Kenya and bought land on this remote island out in the middle of Lake Victoria, along with a group of Kenyan organic farmers that they had met on the internet. And they said, don't get on that bus to Tanzania. You should just come see our farm for a night. Come visit us. And we said, okay. And we ended up basically spending the rest of our trip there. We never made it to South Africa. And I've been hooked on this island pretty much for the last 7 years. It's been my my passion in life, and it's really shaped a lot of the places I've gone since then, and feel very blessed to have brought so many other friends and family into this project that we've started on this place called Mfengano Island.
Mfengano.
Yep. So
I'm going to try and remember to say that correctly.
It's a tough one.
We'll see how well we do there.
Yeah, it's the largest Kenyan island in Lake Victoria, and about 30,000 people live there. It's about 3 hours from the mainland by small wooden boats, which we'll be talking about. People live there in these beautiful fishing communities, but without any electricity or roads, and hardly any health services whatsoever. No running water.
And no electricity.
No electricity. Actually, in 2012, the power company was able to connect a small diesel generator that provides power to some homes. But all of our work on the island has been solar and wind powered. Eventually after spending a few years working on this island as a medical anthropologist and decided that I wanted to do my research there, we got an opportunity to build a community center with some land that was donated by a community leader there named Joel Oguta. And that opportunity really is what got me involved and hooked on Mfengano, I think, for the rest of my life, trying to build this solar-powered community center.
And that was, I guess we might consider that the first stage of the overall project down there?
Yeah, I think, when we got started, we had a very simple idea. Initially, I was doing research on looking at some of the ecological factors behind the HIV epidemic in this part of the world. It really is one of the regions hit hardest by HIV, pretty much anywhere on the planet. About 30% of the population is infected there, which is an incredibly high prevalence, even for sub-Saharan Africa.
Am I wrong about this? HIV was first discovered somewhere in Africa, wasn't it?
Correct.
In the African continent?
Yeah, actually right along the shores of Lake Victoria, on the opposite side of the lake in Uganda, is where the first reports in 1982 of Slim disease started to emerge. But in large part, a lot of what my research looked at was the way that the fishing industry there, which was really something like a gold rush in the early 80s, a foreign species of fish that was introduced by the British government called Nile perch, created a huge boom in the early 80s, and you had hundreds of thousands of migrant fishermen converging on Lake Victoria right as HIV was emerging, and it really propelled the epidemic in a way that happened in few other places around the continent. But so that was my research. And while I was there looking at this, my friend Joel, who was an organic farmer on the island, said, I'd like to donate some of my family's land to build a community center or a library was kind of the initial idea. And then we began having meetings and talking with villages around the island about what they would like to see. And one thing that we heard over and over and over from everybody was that they wanted access to the internet, that they could read about it on the newspaper. They have cell phones there, but no access to the internet. And this was 2007. And so we had this idea, which was to build a free solar-powered cyber cafe, essentially, and to provide unlimited access to any person on the island with one catch, that in order to come use the center, you have to join our club. And club membership, the only membership requirement is that you learn your own HIV status and you sit with a counselor and go for an HIV test. It was kind of this initial idea we said, and we started talking with people about it in the community, and people were actually really excited. One, because they wanted the internet, but two, people realized that it was actually provided this blanket cover for everybody to get tested, because it's so awkward for people in these communities across East Africa to be seen going into a testing facility. I mean, it'd be like a small town in Glenwood if there was a big sign on downtown, you know, right on Grand that said HIV testing. It'd be so awkward to see your pastor going in there or your wife or your friends from high school. So people were afraid to use HIV testing services. But this platform kind of, we hope, created this opportunity for people to learn their status and use the internet.
Particularly in a place where, as you said, 30% of the people are HIV positive.
Absolutely.
Can you compare that to the United States?
Sure.
Do you have numbers here?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. In the United States, it's less than 1% in most communities. You know, there's a few cities that have higher prevalence rates in certain demographics, but nowhere in the U.S. is it even close to that. You know, and this is actually, that's the general population. This point, after 3 decades of the HIV epidemic, it's not, you know, restricted to young men or women or sex workers. You know, it's everybody in the community has been touched by this disease.
That was the initial plan. That was the first stage of this. And that, I assume, you've gotten past stage one, so the community center has been built?
Yep. You know, initially, we initially thought it would take us about 9 months was our first plan for the center. But we decided to hire only local welders and carpenters and masons to give employment to people in this community. We actually employed about 60 people during this project, and it took us about 3.5 years to build this center.
And how did you get the resources to get this done?
So the resources came from, we received support from many different places. In the beginning, it really was friends and families and some fundraising that we did, both in England at the time, but also here in Glenwood. We received a lot of support from Rotary clubs here in Glenwood Springs, from many individuals who I hope I get a chance to mention that helped us do a lot of fundraising. The Richard and Mary Ann Reinisch Foundation, which was a foundation my grandparents were a part of, gave us some of our first seed funding. But then actually we got kind of our first big break when Google actually supported our work. And the founder of Craigslist, who I met at a cafe in San Francisco, Newmark.
I was going to say, his name is really Craig, right?
Yep, Craig. Who, we're kind of touched by this idea of, you know, free access to the internet for this remote community, also encouraging HIV awareness. So that's where we got some of our first seed funding. And, spent about 3 years building this center. And by the time we really opened doors, we realized that it was much more than a cyber cafe. It really was a community center that had an opportunity to allow so many people in this community that had interesting ideas and passion and were really motivated but had had no place to get started organizing agricultural trainings and educational programs and livelihood workshops, such that we really redesigned the center to serve as a multi-purpose community center, much like our community center here in Glenwood.
How long has the community center been open?
We officially opened in 2009. So I guess it's been about 4 years now. I think we say, really though, the truth is, as soon as we started construction, we put a tent up on this site and started hosting events. So this year we're really celebrating what we consider our 5th birthday. We have just over 3,000 members have joined the club.
That was my next question. So 3,000 people have been tested.
Uh-huh. To be a member of the club, you have to renew your membership every 6 months. You sit with our full-time counselors there. And then we work closely with a series of clinics that are supported by the University of California in San Francisco to provide care and treatment for everyone. But beyond that, the center itself has really opened up a diverse set of community health initiatives. We run an organic farm there. We run a mountain bike shop where we get bicycles from a group out of Boulder. Bicycles for Humanity has sent us 2 shipping containers full of mountain bikes. Most of them that have tags that say something like, if you don't remove your bike from the bike rack, the University of Colorado police will confiscate it at the end of the summer and donate it to charity.
So that's where they go.
We get them out there. We run a women's artisans group, the Sisterhood Exchange Program, which has been selling crafts to the Mother's Day Mile.
Which we've talked about. I know at least last year we talked about that when your mom came in to talk about
Mother's Day Mile.
Yeah.
That's been a big one of our big initiatives. And as I was saying earlier, we've been really excited in the process of actually bringing internet out to the island. It's funny that we walked around promising this to people 5 years ago. It actually was an effort that took us several years to figure out how to do it. And in the end, we came up with a system where we bounce a signal off a skyscraper in the nearest city, about 100 miles north of us. And then that signal comes to this tower that we welded and put up on a piece of land on the island, and it bounces it down to our community center. It's the longest Wi-Fi link in East Africa, and it gives us high-speed internet. And that, once we actually set up all the time it took to get this tower built and figure out all these systems, it gave us the chance to launch a wind-powered radio station. And out of this community center, we now broadcast in the local language, which is called Suba, to about 200,000 people in this region. And we heard recently it's the first wind-powered radio station in Africa. So that's been a kind of another exciting offshoot of this community center.
First in the entire continent.
From as far as we're aware of right now.
Wow.
You know, I think there are some other programs that use wind boosters at some of their remote towers. Hmm. But our radio studio is solar-powered and our transmitter is wind-powered.
That's great. And again, there's a big benefit for this, all of these projects in Mfungano Island.
Said it right.
Awesome.
Good.
In Lake Victoria, Kenya. We'll talk a little bit more about, I guess, what you might call phase 2
sure.
of this
yep.
project, and tell you more about the fundraiser this Thursday night at Treads in downtown Glenwood in just a couple minutes. You're listening to KMTS Connections. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. Again, we're visiting this afternoon with Chaz Salmon, talking about a community project in Mfungano Island, Lake Victoria, Kenya. The first phase, I guess you might say, was the community center, which has been built, and that kind of started to bring internet service to this little community there on the shore of Lake Victoria. And that phase has been completed. And now working on a second phase. You mentioned, before we get into that, actually, there is a fundraiser coming up this Thursday night at Treads in downtown Glenwood.
Yep.
You mentioned, Chaz, that one of the first groups, or you got a lot of money initially for this project from Rotary Clubs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know polio is a big deal to Rotary Clubs, and they're very close to nearing eradication of polio.
Yes.
And they're talking, there's a lot of talk amongst Rotary Clubs about, well, what will the next big project be?
Hmm.
You know, clean water obviously is a big one for them, and they support a lot of clean water projects
yes.
all over the world. And I have to think that HIV could potentially be another direction they might go. I wonder if that's one of the reasons why they were so on board with supporting your project.
Sure. I mean, Rotary has been one of our very best partners from the beginning. And I think, in part because I think Rotary does a good job of doing the type of work, I think, in line with the philosophy that we've had with this project, which is really keeping it local. Hmm. You know, we know very intimately the families and communities that benefit from this program in Kenya, as well as the people here in the U.S. that have helped us, you know, fundraise. And I think Rotary does a good job of maintaining those long-term relationships. And so the two clubs here in Glenwood, the Sunrise and the Noon Rotary Clubs, have both contributed to our work, as well as the Fort Collins Breakfast Rotary Club. And to the extent that they've actually been helping us form our own Rotary Club on the island, we're actually just about to charter the first Rotary Club on Mfungano, actually in that whole region. But I do believe that I think HIV, clean water, as you mentioned, is, I think, an ongoing area of collaboration that we've had with Rotary. Mm-hmm. And so many of those diseases, once you're actually on the ground in a small village in a place like Kenya, you see how interrelated they are and how connected they are to poverty and sanitation and lack of livelihood opportunities. So many of these diseases for me now I see as a constellation of one syndemic, which is really poverty and ecological degradation.
Often I've talked with various Rotary members about this over the years, and probably the most eloquent conversations I've had with Ken Robinson from, I think he's a member of the Sunrise Rotary in Glenwood. I don't know which club.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, a lot of people ask, well, why do you care about polio, clean water, whatever, halfway around the world? And his response is always, you know what? All of those diseases are one plane ride away.
Yeah.
Yep. Which, you know, kind of brings it...
our world is smaller.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
It is.
So let's talk about phase two of your project on Mfungano Island.
Sure. Well, so as I mentioned, you know, getting to this island takes about 2 to 3 hours on small wooden canoes. They're usually about 30 to 40 feet long. They'll have a 15 or 40 horsepower motor at the most. And you'll see 40 to 50 people crammed onto these boats with cows and construction supplies and motorcycles and bread and eggs and chickens. And it's the only way to get back and forth to the island. The boats come in the morning and they come at night, which is can be slow and scary and maybe just a little frustrating how long it takes. But in terms of medical emergencies, is a real problem for people in these communities for decades. Because if you have an emergency in the middle of the night, or if you're a laboring mother, you, for the longest time, you've literally had to wait until the next boat arrived and then cram on with 60 other people and, you know, cows and everything else and try and get to the hospital. And we, one of our good friends in this community is a man named Walter Opio, who was actually the one of the pilots of these boats for years and years. Every time we took the boats, we'd sit in the back and chat with Walter. And he was actually over at our house one night. We were having a beer, just kind of talking about how ridiculous it was that people have to wait for emergencies to the boats that come at morning and night. And Walter said, you know what, it's true that it's a shame that that's happened. Let me go talk to my boss who owns the boats. And the next day, Walter motored up in a boat and said, guys, my boss just donated this boat. And it was a 35-foot boat. You see it here in some of the pictures on our flyers. So we can use it as long as we want as an emergency boat. And so we fixed up an old 40-horsepower motor. We got the boat repaired and repainted, and then we talked to some folks back home here in Glenwood. And actually, some of the people that really helped us out initially were Guy Brickle and students at Glenwood Springs High School, and helped us raise about $2,500, which was enough for us actually to employ Walter full time. We hired him, and we initiated some trainings in the community with volunteer first responders, and started off Walter as a 24-hour on-call emergency boat pilot. And it was kind of – basically, it started in a matter of weeks. Walter was excited, and we hired him. But the next thing you knew, we were fielding truly serious critical emergencies in the middle of the night with completely lay volunteers and an old rickety boat. And that's what we've been doing actually for the last 2 years. Walter's been responding to dozens of emergencies, from women with obstructed labor – snake bites. We've had people in seizures. This past week, unfortunately, we had a fatality. One of the tractors on the island rolled over. Mm. But this boat is the only ambulance for about 30,000 people. To get takes about an hour on our boat to get to the nearest hospital on the mainland.
So it's give or take around three times as fast as the old-fashioned method.
Yeah, I mean, and the reality is that we can respond in the middle of the night.
Right.
And we've also tried to set it up in a way that, so our organization hires, we pay Walter's salary, and he's on 24-hour call, and we have fuel. That's the other problem for people in the middle of the night, is fuel on the island has to be carried out on these boats. So organizing fuel takes hours, and people have to have cash, which is always in short supply because it literally has to arrive in someone's pocket on this island. There's no banks. So we keep a supply of fuel ever ready. And then we just take people as soon as they have an emergency, and we ask a family to repay the cost of the fuel only over 3 months, is basically the contribution that we ask for from the community. But that means that people aren't running around in the middle of the night trying to pull together money from family members while their laboring mother is in distress.
Or a loved one is having a seizure.
Exactly.
Or
a child has been bit by a snake.
Yeah, right.
And unfortunately, we have too many tragic stories where it was just delays like that. Mm-hmm. You know, the hours that it took to just get money together for fuel made the difference.
And your fundraiser this Thursday night is to help offset those costs of paying his salary and the fuel and making sure there's cash on hand?
Yep. The reality is this bolt, which was donated to us secondhand when we got it, we've repaired, it's on its last legs. It's actually been leaking very badly for the last year, to the point at which I'm starting to feel like Walter is really risking his life every night when he goes out with this boat. So we've decided that it's really time to upgrade this boat and the use that it's getting now. This community deserves a more serious ambulance boat. And I think we've proven the concept that it works and that it's needed. So this fundraiser is really to raise money for a new ambulance boat, as well as a series of trainings that we're going to initiate next year with community health workers throughout the island and how to respond to emergencies. There's nothing like an EMT service. But there's some really dedicated and inspired women in each community that volunteer as community health workers. And we'd like to build their capacity to help deal with these types of emergencies.
They'll be the first trained first responders on the island.
So there are no first responders Mm-mm. of any kind.
Mm-mm. There's two or three very small health facilities. There's no physicians. They're staffed by nurses. But they have no electricity, no running water. Very limited medical supplies. So any serious medical case has to go to the mainland for definitive treatment.
Which, again, before this was a three-hour boat ride away, and that was only once in the morning and once at night.
Exactly.
And so that this ambulance boat will help get folks to the medical care they need a lot faster.
Yep.
So let's talk about the fundraiser itself. It's this Thursday night, the 13th, from 5 to 7 at Treads in downtown Glenwood. And what kind of a fundraiser is it? What's going to be going on?
Well, you know, what we thought with this fundraiser, and I think what's unique about our organization is the relationships, both in Kenya, the friendships that have really kind of grown and sustained the organization there, as well as here in Glenwood. And we want to take a chance just to recognize so many people here in the Valley that have been a part of this. And so hopefully at this night we can kind of share with other members of the community some of the people here in Glenwood that have really made a difference from the very beginning. I wanted to introduce people here in Glenwood to some of our friends on the island, people like Walter, people like Joel, who donated his land, people like Pam Mohammed, who is one of our first community health workers, so that help people really understand some of the faces there that are doing this work. We're going to have some free food. We'll have some beverages. Can I say we'll have beer?
I think you're not supposed to. But that's okay. Thirst quenchers.
Yeah, we'll have some thirst quenchers.
That happen to go in a pint glass. So you can extrapolate what's going to go in the pint glass.
Share some stories and a bit of our vision for an initiative that we really see as being sustained through the strength of these relationships. For me, it's been so exciting because in the very beginning when I got into this project, it was actually a bit terrifying to feel like I was being pulled away from my friends and family. I was spending more and more time on this remote island out in Kenya. You know, it takes 3 days to get there. And kind of also starting to feel like this really might be, you know, a piece of my life's work. But it was very scary to think that I was leaving behind friends and family. What's been so powerful for me over the years has been how my friends and family have come on board to support this work. From my younger brother, Marco, who is the chairman of the Organic Health Response Board, and as a physician helps run this emergency boat program, to both of my parents, Dr. Paul Salmon and Nancy Reines, who've come to the island several times and helped us establish the Sisterhood Exchange Program, where we now have women from the island selling crafts here in Glenwood. My wife, Jenna Hines, who's sitting outside, who I met on the island. She came to volunteer. She's from Wisconsin, and her sister happened to come volunteer on our farm. About 7 years ago, right before we even really started, as well as, you know, friends like Gus Lundeen, who agreed about 5 years ago to be our accountant. I'm not sure he knew what he was taking on at the time, but is now the CFO for our organization, our treasurer, and helps us manage all of our accounts. Last year, we brought in just over $250,000 to support this program, and Gus has done all of our accounting. People like Forrest Lowell, who was another graduate in my brother's year from Glenwood Springs High School, who's as an engineer actually helped us design the schematics for this tower so that we could carry it up the mountain and stand it up. The Roaring Fork Women's Triathlon team that has been a huge supporter of our women's group on the island, and the Advocate Safe House, folks like Guy Brickle and his students at Glenwood Springs High School who helped us raise money, the Rotary Clubs, thinking about people like Rain and Ashton Durrett, who donated so generously to our program, and my friend Robert Dubois, who has designed our website and our t-shirts and the logo that you can see on all these pint glasses.
I know Robert. He's my cousin.
Really?
Kind of. Yeah, kind of, sort of.
Okay.
Shirt tail relative.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, for me, it went from being something where I felt like I had a crisis in my life in my mid-20s when I realized I want to do this work, but I don't want to be away from my friends and family forever. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden, my friends and family were a part of it. And now it's interesting that when we get together at a family reunion, yeah, even my cousin is an architect who designed our community center. So it's been pretty interesting to see the ways in which this has, I feel like, continued to bring my family together, mm-hmm. and so many friendships that have become a part of this. I feel like it's a big piece of our sustainability, to be honest. Mm-hmm. You know, and when you do this type of work, when you talk about global health, people give you, they want to know your sustainability plan. And what they usually mean is, what's your business plan? What's your income generation? What's your revenue stream? And I think we've got some of those pieces that have come together in a meaningful way. But at the same time, for me, sustainability has been the realization that we're willing to do this for a very long time. I want to be a part of this project for decades and see generational impact in this very special island. And knowing that my friends and family are a part of it, my friends and family are going to be together for a long time. And it feels like that gives us a lot of strength, the same way that these communities on Fingano, their families have been intact for generations. It's a way, I think, of doing global health work that's a bit different from, I think, the standard model. Mm-hmm. And I think this fundraiser is kind of about celebrating that local-to-local connection.
And with an anthropology background, you probably are in a unique position, number one, to make that determination, and number two, to decide 50 years from now whether or not you are successful.
Yeah, I think have the ability to evaluate the impact of this project, not just on one specific initiative, but really on the well-being and vitality and self-resilience of this community over time. And I think that for me is this, when I think about what this community center can do for people there, it's really not any one specific project. More so, it's putting their hands back on the driver's wheel for the future of their community. The same way that here in Glenwood we have opportunities through our community center and through our elected officials to really engage in community activism. In Kenya, in this remote place, people didn't have that opportunity. But I think through a lot of our support, they're actually now really able to take control of health issues and education problems and environmental problems in a way that they didn't before. So I think it's helping them have that capacity that is really, that's really the core of this work.
Again, you can help support this work by attending a fundraiser this Thursday night at Treads in downtown Glenwood from 5 to 7 o'clock. It is a benefit for the Organic Health Response, which we've been talking about this afternoon with Nancy and Chaz. And again, they will have some complimentary, as Nancy refers to them, thirst quenchers in pint-sized glasses. And they actually have some very cool pint glasses that will come with a donation as well. Plus, as Chaz mentioned, a lot of stories and an opportunity for you to meet a lot of the folks that have been working on Mfungano Island in Lake Victoria, Kenya. And I was so worried about it, and yet I think I've done a reasonable job of pronouncing that every time.
Every time people hear about this place, it takes a minute for that to roll off their tongue.
To say the name.
Yeah.
Fungano Island.
Exactly.
We'll take one final break. When we come back, we will wrap things up with Nancy and Chaz. Again, if you would like to learn more about the Organic Health Response organization, you can go to their website, which is organichealthresponse.org. If you'd like to talk more or ask questions about Thursday night's fundraiser at Treads, you can call Treads at 928-0620. Again, that fundraiser happens this Thursday night from 5 to 7 at Treads in downtown Glenwood. We'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to KMTS Connections. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. As we wrap things up today, again, we're talking with Chaz Solomon, who is a founding member of something called Organic Health Response. They've been working on a couple different projects on Mfungano Island in Lake Victoria, Kenya. See, now I'm so good at saying it. I just want to say it over and over and over and over again. Again, we mentioned earlier that Chaz brought his mom, Nancy Reinisch, who, of course, we've talked to so many times over the years and is so involved with local stuff and fundraisers. And, of course, Mother's Day Mile has been your thing for so many years. How, you know, Chaz has mentioned, even as a 20-something-year-old young man, he was thinking a little bit, you know, I'm spending a lot of time away from home on this remote island. It takes 3 days just to get there. Yep. How did mom feel about this first time you heard? Well, the whole way that he found Mfungano Island was he was going to go on a 6-week backpack trip across Kenya for crying out loud, you know? How did you feel about that? That had to be bad enough.
That was terrible just to hear all of that. No, I think the whole thing was scary for us in the beginning, for his dad and I. But, you know, Paul and I have always supported our kids, Chaz and Marco, in whatever they were doing, whether it was sports, whether it was school. And then this Organic Health Response in Mfungano Island, I think, has been their most ambitious project. And when I knew that Chaz was starting to get very serious about this island, I was scared to death. I mean, here we're talking about an emergency boat for people on the island. I was worried about an emergency boat for my son. To me, this island was as remote as anything I had ever known in my whole life. And we were very worried about where this was going with him until we actually took a trip to the island. So Chaz was able to help us get there on 3 boat rides and 22 hours later and living in a little abode, that tent, I guess it was a tent that you put up for us, and we got to meet the villagers. And I think that's when my heart moved over to what he's feeling now and what he's trying to tell you today.
I did not ask about this, but you mentioned before we actually started the interview how similar you find this island to be to your growing up in Glenwood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I had that feeling. I was saying that when I was there one summer, I started playing with a soccer team there, just one of their club teams, a team called Maji Maji, which means water. It's funny, our dog's name is Maji now. And it was a Saturday afternoon game, and saw the way that every person in town showed up for this game and the rivalries between – we were playing one village called Kitawi, was playing the next village down the road called Kiteni. And it felt like, you know, a Demon Bears, you know, football game. It was that feeling. I felt very nostalgic, and I felt like this is the small type of community that I grew up in, where people know the mayor and people know the police chief and people know their teachers, and that sense of just kind of an interconnected, resilient community, despite all the disease and poverty that these people were facing. It felt like, man, this place is still very strong. You know, this community is still strong. It felt like home. And that, yeah, continues when I'm there. It actually still, it feels like another home these days.
And then when we go there, I'm Mama Charles, and Dad is Baba Charles. Yeah. And the mothers always take the name of their firstborn child. So they embraced us like we were, you know, members of the village, basically.
Well, and from their standpoint, you certainly have done a lot for the people in this village.
Yes.
Really, or I guess to rephrase it more in a way, the way you framed it, you have helped them do a lot for themselves.
And that's really what it is. I think that Chaz and Marco and the whole board of the Organic Health Response have set up a system for them to be gone from the island and let it run on its own there. That between all the directors and all the people that are being employed through this nonprofit, they are able to live lives here in America while the folks on the island live their lives in a...
Yeah, we now have about... just over 40 full-time Kenyan employees that run this center. There had been a time when I thought maybe we need to be here, you know, throughout the year. And actually my wife and I, my brother and her sister, the four of us bought a piece of land there from a family that we had known. And we built a house there. So we have a place that we call home when we go there. But I think the reality has been that we've seen that these leaders and health workers and farmers and teachers that run this community center are very capable, and they don't need us there holding their hand. They just needed some resources, some training, and some connections to really do the types of things that community activists here in Glenwood do. And that's... Yeah.
One, I was just going to add that, you know, as we watch Gabe, as we watch our kids grow and do wonderful things in the world, we are so heartened by the fact that the young people that grew up in this valley are doing such wonderful things all over the world. You know, all of your, so many of your classmates are doing wonderful things. And I think it goes, when I look at what you're saying about the young people coming into the Ikeola Kiona Center to get their HIV testing, by getting tested, knowing their status, they're going to save the world too. They're going to prevent the spread of HIV. It's the young people that want to use the computers that will allow themselves to get tested and show that it's not such a bad stigma anymore. Once you know your status, you can get help. In the same way the young people here are making changes all over the world.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Chaz. When you're young, in your 20s, even younger, it can really feel like you don't have a lot of control over what's going on, even in your own life, much less be able to affect others. And yet what your mom just said is absolutely correct, that really you have the ability to have a profound effect on your own life and on others' lives.
Yeah, I think that's true.
It's certainly something that I did not believe when I was that age.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Clearly you
They're
did.
Showing us the way.
Because look at what you've
He's
done,
showing
right?
showing us the way, really.
And it seems to, yeah, I mean, it seems to me, I think, finding something that you can be very enthusiastic about makes the difference. And, that there are these very serious health problems that we face all over the world. But actually, it just takes getting started. I think for us, we didn't know how to beat HIV. It's still a huge complex problem, but we could actually figure out how to build a center. We could figure out how to put together the bricks and the mortar, and like getting started and getting enthusiastic about it, all of a sudden different opportunities open up.
Reminds me of something a former employee used to tell me all the time. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
Yep, exactly.
Again, you can help support Organic Health Response by attending a fundraiser this Thursday night at Treads in downtown Glenwood from 5 to 7. And I'll give you a couple different forms of contact. If you want to learn more about the fundraiser Thursday night, call Treads. Their number is 928-0620. If you just would like to learn more about Organic Health Response, that is exactly their website, organichealthresponse.org. You can go there to learn more if you'd like to donate. If you'd like to learn more about the organization, of course, show up Thursday night and you can learn more, particularly if, how should we say this in a politically correct way, you're an individual who is capable of large donations of either...
We'll set aside a pint glass for you.
There please. You go. Of either cash, resources, or time.
I'm sure
that you would be happy to take advantage of any one of those three areas.
Absolutely.
That's a good point, because there'll be something for everybody at this fundraiser, from the small donor who just wants to come in and see what we're all about and get a wonderful pint glass, to the large donor that wants their name on the boat.
I love that glass, by the way.
It's yours.
Is it really?
Absolutely.
I'm telling you right now, that will live in my freezer and it will occasionally be filled up with my favorite beverage.
And your listeners can get one too if they come down to the Treads Thursday night. We want to thank Treads too, Chaz.
Yep, Treads has then made this possible for us. So we're excited to have this venue. Excited just to share what we've been doing, thank people across the valley. And, hopefully launch this boat, because...
Literally.
Yep.
Literally.
We need it. They need it.
Again, organichealthresponse.org is the website. And if you would like to learn more, ask questions specifically about Thursday's fundraiser, just give Treads a call at 928-0620. So thank you both very much for coming in today. I appreciate your putting up with my lay questions.
You did great. You always do great, Gabe.
That's L-A-Y, not L-E. I'm not speaking French.
Just Swahili.
There you go.
Sante sana.
Sante sana.
For those of you that have remember the movie, The Gods Must Be Crazy. Going to have to watch that again now that we're talking
about it. Yeah, we all are.
Again, the website, organichealthresponse.org, and Treads' phone number for questions about Thursday's fundraiser, 928-0620. Thanks again. We'll talk to you both. Well, I know I'll be talking to you, Nancy.
You know. I'll be here again. Thank you.
You've been listening to KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30. It's another reason we are the most listened to radio station from Rifle to Aspen.